Welcome to Draft Sickos, the show on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed and YouTube channel, where we cover everybody from the biggest of names to the deepest of sleepers. I'm your host, Maxwell Baumbach, and today my guest is technically you, the listeners, because this is going to be a mailbag episode. I threw out some questions to the No Ceilings universe that you guys wanted me to cover and answer on the show, and I'm going to answer those today. It's Easter weekend. This is technically being recorded on Saturday night, so if you're listening to it Monday morning, and a prospect has committed a major crime on Sunday, and I don't address it, that's why. It's Easter weekend. There's a lot going on. But yeah, we're glad to have everybody here. Love all of our live listeners and people watching on Twitter and on YouTube. If you guys have any questions during the show, send them in the chat. We'll try to get to those. I wanted to focus on some of my favorites, though. There are some real good ones that popped up that I want to get to tonight, starting with this one from Basketball Strategy on Twitter. Have you written about Jahni Broome? What would be the one sentence take or pick number? Jahni Broome is a guy that I like a lot. Jahni Broome is currently in my 30s. I haven't finished my board. We're submitting boards again this week. He's in my 30s right now. My one sentence take, if I had to sum it up in one word, or one sentence, I guess, not one word. What am I saying? This is why I got to have a guest most weeks. Keep me in check and make sure I remember how to speak in complete sentences. My one sentence take would be he's good at basketball, but I'm a little bit concerned about the positional size. When I talk to people in NBA front offices, particularly about centers, one thing that I found a lot is that they want a simplified center role when we're talking about guys that aren't starters. So if your projection of Jahni Broome is that he's going to be so good that he's a starter, I think this conversation changes a little bit. I'm not there personally, especially just with the influx of great centers that we're seeing at the moment and that we've seen the last couple of years. I think Broome is well-rounded, which is awesome. But I think when the pitch is just like, this guy's good at basketball, but they're not super athletic or they don't have great positional size, teams start to get a little bit leery of it, because how many guys are so good at basketball that they play right away as rookies and are immediately contributors? So without those two traits, it becomes a little bit more difficult. With that being said, Jahni Broome was exceptionally productive for Auburn this season. I thought it was really interesting too. He's on a great growth curve. Like, He had two seasons at Morehead State where he was really good, transferred up to Auburn, stayed productive, but then in his fourth year, started to take more threes than ever before, went from 0.9 threes per game to 2.3 per game, hit 35.4% of them. It's a pretty stroke. He's always rebounded well. He's always protected the rim well, and he's developed quite a bit as a passer too. So you end up with this just loaded statistical profile where he is really tough on the glass. He blocks a ton of shots. He generates steals because there's like a level of feel, but also to his credit, he weighed in at 247 pounds at the combine last year. And he wasn't like a chubby 247 pounds. Like, he was strong, and he's still strong, but he slimmed down. It looks to me, I could be wrong. Maybe he didn't. But I thought he looked lighter and leaner at the start of this season. And it really shows up with how he moves his feet in space. Like, when I saw that, I was like, God, is that really the move to get like skinnier when you're, you know, maybe a little bit small for a center? But like, nothing changed. Like, he's still the same guy in the glass. His block rate was basically the same. And instead he's just a little bit more scheme versatile. He looked a little bit more comfortable switching. I wouldn't like use a switch scheme if he was going to be the guy anchoring my defense, but he can do it. There's times where you just got to do it. And I think he's up to the task. He is so physical. Like, he is really, really tough, plays with a really high motor. But again, like, it's just the fact that he's older. He is a senior coming in. I'm more optimistic about him than I would be about most senior centers because of that growth curve that we've seen for him. But I believe he had a 7-foot wingspan and like a 9-foot standing reach. So like, he's just a little bit down the positional, like the center size spectrum in terms of size. So if we look at wingspans from the last draft, like, he has a shorter wingspan than like Coleman Hawkins, Jerron Holmes, Taylor Hendricks, Tumani Kamara, Kobe Brown, Omax, Trace Jackson Davis. Like wingspan wise, like he is coming up a little bit short, and that's a tough sell at the center position in the NBA. And I think just the fact that it's when you're like that and you're a little bit undersized, are you going to be able to anchor a defense and drop coverage? I don't know. Like in my conversations, front offices, I think teams in a center want a clearly defined role, and they want to know like what is the defensive coverage that you're going to be in. In which Jani Broome, it's just like a little bit complicated. Like I guess he's probably predominantly a drop guy, because it's generally just like drop or switch. Like there's not a lot of like show hedge. Like it happens, but it's not an everyday thing, or a super common thing. Yeah, and with him being a little bit short, I think that's where it gets dicey for Broome. But he's so good. Like he's got a BPM of like 14.2. Just analytically looking at him compared to centers that have stuck in the NBA across like the last several years, like there are no red flags. Like Jani Broome, I think is a pretty safe backup bet. And I wouldn't hate, I think like he's going to be in my tier. If I do my tier similar to how I did him last year, like my tier of what I call like first round reasonable, where if a team like Denver, not even just looking at like who has a pick, decides they want to address their backup center position through the draft, and they see Jani Broome as a guy who's like physically strong and maybe a little bit more ready to go out of the box from that standpoint, out of the gate that still has some skill, that's a guy that I could see them keying in on. I think the fact that there's just like no clear like one sentence identity for what exactly he's bringing to your team, where it's not like he's a rim runner, he's a rim protector. The guys who are just sort of like generally good, I think, can tend to slip through the cracks, and I think that might be the case with Jani Broome. But I like him a lot. Early second would be like ideal for me. Like if I could get him on one of those like cheap guaranteed 4-year deals, I'd like that quite a bit. The other question that he had asked, basketball strategy, that was said Anton Watson unranked in the No Ceilings mock, any better in your personal take? I've got him in my top 100. I've just never been a big fan of Anton Watson, for the unfamiliar, he is a fifth-year guy at Gonzaga. He does have fans. He's like 6'8", 225, total Swiss Army knife, especially on defense. Like he can really guard down the lineup well. Okay guarding up the lineup, like long arms, pretty strong, pretty tough. Not like a jump out of the gym athlete. He shot 41.2% from three this year, but the volume is low. Career 62% free throw shooter. Really good passer, like just sort of a guy in that like Trendon Watford type mold, like these Delano Banton, like these types of like forwards. And those guys are a little more like point guardy than Watson, who's more of like a traditional connective four. I don't know, like those, and like those two guys I just mentioned are guys that like got acquired on the cheap this last year, and they're still not like particularly great. And Watford is, I believe, still younger than Watson and had so much more juice as a creator coming out, that to me, Anton Watson is just like not a guy I'm interested in expending draft capital on. Like if I got him on an undrafted deal, I maybe. But he's a fifth year guy who, again, like there's just not like a clear cut NBA skill here. But I do think he's going to float around. Like I think he's going to continue to get looks because he's a good rebounder. He's a good passer for his size. He can defend a few positions. I just don't really know like where you put him on the court offensively, because like if he's going to be a handoff guy or a roller, it's like he just doesn't really have like serious rim gravity. Like he's not going to be a guy that you throw lobs to, and he's not going to reliably space the floor. So I just think it gets a little bit murky if you don't have like an answer for where exactly do I put him on offense. I think that's generally sort of a red flag for me. And I think with a guy like Jonathan Mogbo, for example, like that guy dunks like 700 times a game. So with him, it's like, okay, yeah, here's also, you know, sort of like this, you know, either undersized five or four that you need a stretch five to play alongside. With Mogbo, it's like, I can just toss that guy lobs all day. With Watson, like that's not really the case. And Watson is a year older and doesn't have like the weird like late growth spurt that Mogbo's had. So like there's just other guys in that archetype that I think are a little bit more interesting anyway. But I think he's going to get looks. He'll probably like not fail out of the league. Like I'd be stunned if like in 2 years we look up and he's just in Europe. You know what I mean? Like NBA teams will keep giving him two ways and keep taking looks at him, I think. Dr. Madison Moore asks, which prospect has a higher ceiling than Khalil Ware? What is the behind the scenes intel that has teams and scouts down on Ware this year? This is a great question because Khalil Ware is a guy who I think is like sneaky polarizing because people aren't really like popping off with takes about him. I am sort of a Khalil Ware agnostic. I'm going to give the most boring answer and be a Khalil Ware centrist. No, I think Khalil Ware is good. I think the idea of Khalil Ware is a lot more interesting than like what Khalil Ware actually is a basketball player, but I think he's clearly good. Let's address the intel stuff first. Personally, like I'm not a guy who's going to like ever like peddle negative intel about a player. Like I'm just not going to like publicly dump on a kid. Like I'm just not something I'm really interested in doing. With Khalil Ware, what I will say is I've heard some like, I think that the intel might, and maybe I'm wrong because I'm not like Mr. Intel. Like I don't talk to everybody all the time on every team. Like I don't have all the intel in the world. I've heard some things that are a little bit more positive. Like Jonathan Givony made a report last year where he said like part of Khalil Ware's decision to go back to school was that he didn't think the intel process was going to shake out good for him. So I'm sure there's some stuff out there that's like not great for his stock. I've never personally heard anything really damning. And I have heard some people like kind of offer defenses of Khalil Ware as well on that front. So I like for me personally, like I'm not moved one way or another by any intel as far as it comes to Khalil Ware. What I am moved by in both directions is what I've seen on the court. There are some real strengths here. Khalil Ware at 7 feet tall. I love the way he shoots the basketball. I totally buy the jump shot. Like he's one of those 3-point shooters where he took, you know, 1.3 a game, 42.5%, but a really good shot. Even on his mid-range attempts, I think the shot just looks so silky and gorgeous. And he's got a really nice high release on it. I totally buy the shot. I also think Ware is a pretty good passer at times. Assist rate and turnover rate were both like nothing to write home about. Like he wasn't super turnover prone. Assist rate was under 10. But I thought he did see the ball pretty well, see the floor pretty well. And I also think one thing he deserves credit for is like, I would have had a really hard time not getting frustrated if I was Khalil Ware in the role that he played at Indiana this season. Like there were times where he was red hot and those guards would just stop getting him the ball completely. And that can be really frustrating. And I think he might've had a higher assist rate if they fed him more. Like Khalil Ware having a usage rate of 22.9 feels pretty inexcusable given the talent level of that team. Like I would have found ways to play through him more often. So I think that's another feather in his cap. I also think like he is going to measure exceptionally well. I don't know what the wingspan is. But just looking at the guy, like his arms are clearly long. And when he times his jumps well, he can jump out of the gym. Like some of the swats that he's put up this year have been just breathtaking. Like Khalil Ware can do some things. He's a shot blocker and he moves pretty well. Like he's pretty well in space. If it's a situation where a defense is running like a pick and pop and he has to close out to the perimeter, I think he looks really good there because he's so long. He eats up space in the mid range. I think his defensive recognition and defensive engagement was far more consistent this year than it was last year at Oregon. That's the stuff I like about Khalil Ware a lot. I think Khalil Ware is a good basketball player. I do have real reservations about Khalil Ware. Kind of starting with the frame, he is really skinny and he's still just kind of easy to move. And he doesn't look much bigger than he did a year ago. So I do worry about like how much of an effort there's been to put on and maintain size. He is oftentimes a load leaper of the highest magnitude. Like the comment that I made on the pod before is like when Khalil Ware jumps far too often he's jumping like when you're on the seventh grade basketball team and you're all trying to touch the rim for the first time. Like he like will just bend so deep and guys will get up shots over him that they shouldn't be able to if he just jumped normally, because a lot of times like he can get to these shots. Like he doesn't need to load up, but he does exceptionally load up to a degree that he shouldn't. I think there's times where he gets jumpy. He jumps himself out of position. There is sort of just like a lack of like a I guess like a grace to how he plays pick and roll coverages sometimes. Like he can kind of lose his roll man a little bit. Just not like totally consistent as a defender, and makes some frustrating choices as far as like what he does and doesn't jump after. I think he gets a little bit sloppy with his fouls at times too. And then offensively, like I'm not crazy about the shot diet. Like I do feel like he likes to kind of settle for some like turnaround type stuff. That's just not the most efficient look. And I worry about him like finishing inside against NBA size. I think Khalil Ware is like a good athlete who sometimes gets talked about as if he's a great athlete. I don't think he's that great of an athlete. Like I think from a strength perspective in particular, like this guy's a pretty below average, offensive rebounder in particular, but in like even like in situations where it feels like he could get to stuff, he's just not really able to reel it in. Let's see how he stacks up. I'm going to plug him into my draft model and just kind of see where he is at on the defensive glass. I think the defensive rebounding numbers are pretty solid. Yeah, 26 defensive rebounding rate is quite good. But he was awesome as a rebounder in conference. Like I think he ended up the year over 10 a game. So yeah, there's some stuff to like there. I just worry about, I guess rebounding does typically scale up, but just how he deals with NBA physicality and what he looks like on a floor against other NBA center athletes. I'm going to go to this one from Lucas here real quick as well. Maxwell, where are you at with Deron Holmes right now? Let's see. Deron, I have sort of in this same tier a little bit behind them. So I think what I like about where I'm buying the shot more than I am with Holmes, I do think he's a bit better of a rebounder than Holmes. Holmes, I think, has more in-between skill. Like Holmes, if you chase him off the line, like can legit put it on the floor and get to the basket. And he's a much, much better passer than Khalil Ware. I think depending on like what your team is and what your risk tolerance is, I think that can kind of vary. But I do like Khalil Ware a little bit more at this stage, just because I really do buy the jump shot with him. I just think with Ware, like you're really going to have to coach up the defense. Like the defense needs a lot more work. And I don't think he's quite as scheme versatile as he gets credit for. Like I don't love his feet in space, and I just don't totally trust him to anchor a defense and protect the rim right now. So that's where I'm at with him. I think the rebounding and conference play was great. I think his attitude, at least on the floor, to me as a viewer, was really good. Like I mentioned, the fact that he continued to show more consistency in terms of his effort, the fact that he didn't get frustrated when he wasn't getting the ball. I thought he did a really good job. So I'm liking Khalil Ware. I think the intel for now, unless I learn something different, I'm just kind of hand waving. Like I feel like I've heard both sides of it with him. It's not something I'm super hung up on. To me, I just don't think the ceiling is that particularly high. Like just look at like, you know, Chet Holmgren, Victor Wembanyama, the other centers in this draft class. And like, what are the odds that he is an all NBA center at any point? Like, I just don't think he has that sort of ceiling given that he's like a solid athlete. And if people think he's a better athlete than that, I get it. I think the lack of strength hinders that quite a bit. But we're gonna take a break. We're gonna get back to it on the other side. So stick with us. We will be right back. All right, we're going to go to a question from Draft Fanatics. He says, Mark Sears, draftable? He's actually playing in a game right now that I'm not watching because I'm doing this show. Let's see how he's doing, and then I will completely base my answer on how he's performing in this one single game. Now, personally, I would not expend draft capital on Mark Sears. I think Mark Sears is a really great college basketball player. I think he's really smart. I think he can really shoot the cover off the ball. I think he's a really good passer. He's got some real interesting kind of craft and wiggle to his game. He's incredibly selfless, which I like. I love his kind of start stop with the ball to get inside. I love how he uses pump fakes to get the defense in motion. Some nice misdirection to set up his pick and roll game. And he gets that shot off fast. He can get it off from NBA. And he's, I believe, over 40% three-point shooter on the season. So Mark Sears has had a phenomenal season at Alabama. And he was great at Ohio before this. He's really good. Want to talk about combine measurements. If I was harsh to deny Broom earlier, I got to be real harsh on Mark Sears. Mark Sears was 5'10 and three quarters with a 6'2.25 standing reach at Giga Elite Camp last year. In my small guard article, I talked a lot about the small guards that make it. And that like 6'4 wingspan is just something I'm really hung up on. He is stocky. Like he does weigh almost 190 pounds, which is great. Defensively, I just think it's going to be really tough for a guy that size. Like we see bigger guys get kind of routinely bullied and singled out on a consistent basis as it is now. Yeah, like so few point guards are making it. And even the ones that do, like, I don't know that there's like a 20 minute per game path for Mark Sears. And like, you can get point guards like for pretty cheap. Like I just think you can kind of acquire guys in this mold at any time. Like, unless you think he is going to just completely exceed expectations. Like, I don't know. Like, does Andrew Nembhard get you a first right now? And is he going to be better than Andrew Nembhard? Like, I don't know. Like that's kind of how I view it. And that's how it informs my draft philosophy. A team like the Nuggets who drafted Jalen Pickett last year, is a team like that going to see Mark Sears and just say, hey, this guy's already really productive and he's an adult and maybe we bring him in and he contributes? Perhaps. Personally, I'd just be a little bit more ambitious in terms of my personal draft philosophy. And I'm generally big, like play it safe in the second round guy. Like I generally believe that if you're picking in the second round, you just like think a guy's a long-term pro, take him. I'm not sure Mark Sears is that, just based on how difficult it is for small guards right now. So that is my answer to that. I want to get to a question from Joshua West about Portsmouth in a second, because that's like a really interesting topic to me. But I'm going to go to this one first from Mavs Draft. Bonus question, because I went with his bonus question instead of his main question here. Best player of a bad archetype in this year's class, aka tiny guard, non-shooting big that's a med defender, etc. I feel like there's like the obvious answers at the top, like your Rob Dillinghams and stuff like that. If I go a little bit further down, let's see if there are any interesting ones. I think Hunter Salas is like a real answer because like the not quite wing archetype just sort of stinks. Like it should not produce a lot of good players. But he's just been such a good bucket getter this year for Wake Forest that like maybe there's a chance that he turns into something. What about Dylan Jones? It's like an undersized, unathletic wing. And Chase 3 asked about him earlier, so we'll throw that question up on the board here. I like Dylan Jones a lot. Like, I think Dylan Jones is super skilled. I love how he rebounds the ball. I think he's really smart. Like, I just think he's an exceptionally smart player with a slick handle who can run some second side pick and roll, who's going to move the ball really quickly, make decisions fast, way better finisher than people realize. I kind of like the defense. I know that he's a low block rate guy, but he's really good at operating as the low man and getting into position. And because he's so strong, he stays vertical really well. So even though he's not going to like swat shots, I think he's going to alter them and affect them enough. And I do think he has moments where he shows some real quickness, especially if you look at the combine last year. There's times he was like jumping passing lanes and getting into stuff that he just didn't really do at Weber State as much this year because his usage rate was so high. I kind of buy the shot too. Like I know the percentages say not to generally, like there's nice indicators. Like he's always been a great free throw shooter on high volume and whatever. But just the fact that he like, hits from NBA range pretty consistently, doesn't get a lot of unguarded looks, I tend to buy it. But yeah, ended the year with a defensive rebound rate over 30, an assist rate over 30, and a steal rate over 3. Like, that's just big time feel factor stuff. And I think there's enough offensive skill that, like, it's going to work itself out. Like, I just think he's going to find a way to contribute and be around the league for a long time. So, like, undersized wing, guy who measured at, like, 6'4 a year ago, maybe got some extra weight on him that he shouldn't have. Like, not a good vertical athlete. Like, that's not an ideal archetype, but I think that Dylan Jones is a guy that's still going to find a way to make things work. Let's see who else we got in that sort of mold. Yeah, I mean, generally, like, you see a kind of type of player make it over and over again, and I tend to lean pretty heavily into that in my draft philosophy. So yeah, I'm, and like the a lot of times, like, the unideal archetype guys just, like, don't end up being guys who you can, like, get value for later on. Like, they're generally less expensive to acquire, like, a Malik Monk type of guy than it is to acquire, like, even, like, I bet Patrick Williams might be able to get more in a trade than a Malik Monk would be, even, like, with his inconsistencies. Yeah, as I'm kind of going through my board, I feel like that's the last one. I'd maybe throw Emmanuel Miller in there as, like, a non-shooting wing, or, like, a questionable shooting wing who just, like, defends and does a lot of dirty work and is smart, and plays with a really high motor and rebounds and defends. Like, non-shooting wings are always a little bit scary. I think there's an argument that maybe he's not a non-shooting wing because he's made a decent percentage of his threes, even if the volume isn't high. He's just a guy that I kind of trust is going to, like, figure out a way to make it work. Let's get to this one from Joshua West, because this is, like, the type of question the show is all about. Who are you most interested in seeing at the PIT, the Portsmouth Invitational? It is a pre-draft event exclusively for seniors. So it is an older crop, and it's a sicko crop, because a lot of times the guys, like, you're probably thinking, like, if you're, you know, new to the draft space, like, oh, Dalton Connect and Kevin McCullough are going to be, no, those guys decline it. They don't go. I want to give a plug, because this is one of the coolest, like, websites out there. RookieScale.com does a Portsmouth mock every year that is top of the line. So Sam Meyerkopf and John Chepkovich from Draft Express put this thing together. It's stellar. Both of those guys are incredibly smart and really hardworking and very well connected. They do a mock of who they anticipate will be in Portsmouth. So let's go through it and kind of single out some guys. First one I'm going to mention, because he did officially get his invite per the Bradley basketball Twitter account, Malevi Leons from Bradley, 6'9" wing, 2-time Missouri Valley Defensive Player of the Year. Exceptionally interesting. He is a really, really good defender, and he played in a league where he was constantly having to defend really good wings, because Missouri Valley last couple of years, we've had Ben Shepherd, we've had Tucker DeVries. Jace Carter was really talented. Toby Okani, Cade Tyson, just a lot of good wing talent. Marcus Damask was in the league. A lot of good guys. Leons had a steal rate of 2.7 and a block rate of 5.0. 6'9", super long arms, super disruptive, like, very get his hands into everything type of player, but also a very fundamental guy. Like, he does this without gambling very much. He just has really good timing, and he's super, super long. And he plays really hard and really engaged. So yeah, he had 3.0 combined stocks per game last year and this year. Offensively, he's a little bit basic. Like, he's a good cutter, and a solid three-point shooter, like 36% career three-point shooter. I think with Leons, like, what's going to come down to is, like, can he just be a guy who cuts and catches and shoots? The rest of the offensive game is, like, shaky. Like, he's really upright with his handle. He's not much of a passer. Like, he had a negative turnover ratio this year. But guys who are 6'9" and defend and can cut, it's like, all you need is the shot to just, like, be a guy that's on NBA teams for a long time. So he's a guy that's really interesting to me. Let's see who else we had here. Isaiah Crawford, Louisiana Tech, another just, like, super producer kind of guy. So Leons is, like, 6'9" and, like, lanky. Isaiah Crawford is also really long, but he's also built like a tank. Like, I've mentioned this on podcasts before, but like, there's something about like players where I'm like, oh, that guy, like, I would have no chance in a fight against him, that like makes me gravitate toward players. And Isaiah Crawford is one of those guys. So he's a graduate out of Louisiana Tech. Just super well-rounded statistical profile. So 3.8 steal percentage, 5.8 block percentage, true shooting percentage of 57.9, assist rate over 15, defensive rebounding percentage of 14, 16.3 points per game, 41.4% from three, but the volume was like moderate, 3.1 per game. And like, it's a very old man offensive kind of game. He's a top 100 guy for me. I don't totally know what it looks like, because it's that weird thing that happens with mid-major guys sometimes, where like, and let's throw Riley Minix in there too from Morehead State. He's a little bit more familiar to people because they were in the tournament. They played Illinois. He had a really good game. It's like a lot of mid-post and like passing and having to like have the offense run through them. Where both of those guys, like, the role is going to be much more like spot up and shoot. Minix had a really good 3-point percentage on like good volume during this NAIA play. So I think that's, the offense is going to be a little bit easier of a transition for him, but he's a little bit more slow footed. With Crawford, he's this big, strong dude that can really defend. So if he shoots it like at all, he's going to have a career. That's definitely a guy to monitor going into the event. Let's see who else we got in here. We touched on Minix. DJ Burns, he might be number one on my board after this week. Not teasing. Let's see. Neil Quinn from Richmond is an interesting one, like just super skilled center. I don't know like what the NBA ceiling is going to be for him, because he is kind of slow footed and struggles defensively, but he's gotten in a lot better shape over the last few years. I covered him for No Stone Unturned when he first transferred to Richmond, and noted like the big thing with him is like he had to figure out how to block more shots and protect the rim better. He did that to a degree. Like, I don't know that he's going to be good enough to be an NBA rim protector. I kind of think he's probably not, but he's interesting. Xavier Johnson from Southern Illinois was like a super productive small guard who can do everything, and he's got a bulky frame. He's a guy who does a little bit of everything, high steal rate, really incredible passer, super deep range. Absolutely love his game. Drew Pember from UNC Asheville is another guy who's interesting. He's 6'10". He's real thin. And in a lot of games against good teams, he has turned the ball over a lot. Part of that was at UNC Asheville, like, he was the leading option. So he's a guy that I'm super excited to see at Portsmouth, because it's like, all right, now everybody on the floor is good. So when you are playing these good players, like, not all eyes are on you all the time. And at 6'10", like, he can really pass the ball, really good at handoff settings, really good at finding cutters from the top of the key, and like a 38-39% three-point shooter. So if he looks good there, and he's this guy who is 6'10", playing as a forward, dishing the ball, draining threes, and then on defense, like, pretty bouncy guy, like, always had good block rates and can slide his feet pretty well, he's the guy that I think could really turn some heads if everything looks good with him on the court. Keon Brooks at Washington is going to be interesting. I'm not like a huge fan of his game, but I think compared to the guys on this list, better athletes there. I do like, and he's old. Like, this guy's 25. Moses Wood at Washington. He's been to like a million schools. Like, maybe that'll hurt him a little bit. But Moses Wood is a 6'8 three-point shooter. Like, he is a guy who's, I think, hovered around 40% for his college career. Let's see. Man, this guy's been in school for a long time. 40.4% from three across his whole career on high volume. Solid defender too, like, just long, moves his feet pretty well, and like, decent connective passer. But once you hit that like 6'8 height and you shoot like that, it's just different. It's just different than being a guy that's like 6'6 and shoots like that, if you can do anything on defense. So yeah, those are the guys that are on the mock. These guys, other than Leon's, I don't know that any of them have actual invites at this point, but they're on the mock. Those guys are well connected. They know their stuff. They tend to do a really good job with it. of the people on the mock, those are the people that I'm most interested in seeing at Portsmouth. So there's a nice little sicko rundown for you. We're going to take one more break and we'll be back with some final questions here. And we're going to get to some chat questions in just a little bit. There's two more that we're going to get to real quick. The first, I actually tied together kind of two different questions. One's from Nathaniel Miller, and then the other one's from NBA Draft Point. Nathaniel asks, keeping it simple, from a portal entrant, favorite portal entrant new team marriages, who do you want to see where, and what do you think of the fits for already committed players such as Houston Millett and Michael Ajayi? The Ajayi one I like. I like him at Gonzaga. Where I don't like it is that they need shooting, and like the shooting is the one question I have about him at this stage. What I do like about it is it's just another big physical wing. And I think with what they are capable of doing from a player development standpoint, he's just going to give him something a little bit different. And I think the fact that like with how strong and tough he is, like it's another guy to screen for those guards and set them up. Houston Millett, I like just because it's an up-tempo system and he's a guy that shoots a ton of threes. I'm kind of out on him as far as like NBA upside at this point. Like I'm just really not kind of seeing that at this point for him. But I think as a college three-point shooter, he'll do really well. Let's pull up our guys in the transfer portal here on Bartorvik. Available transfers. Sweet. Okay. Joshua Jefferson from St. Mary's. Let's get him at Tennessee. 6'8 wing defender with some real passing feel. Like the shot is an issue, and like Tennessee's not like a great shooting development program, but that could be a fun one. Or yeah, like a school like that would be fun, or just send him to Duke and have Duke just like defend everybody beyond belief. NB Draft Point asked, who are some of your favorite players who've entered into the portal and some team fits you like them on? So same kind of question there. Let's see who else we've got in there. Oh, PJ Haggerty. He's quite good. Depending on what happens with the Duke guards, I kind of like to see him at Duke. I'm not even a Duke fan, but PJ Haggerty is like this tough 6'3 guard who played at Tulsa, and he gets to the free throw line like 8,000 times per game. That's when I'd like to see. My like unorthodox one is Igor Milicic, Jr. from Charlotte is in the portal. He's 6'10". We've talked about him on the podcast a little bit, a few times. I want him to go back to Virginia where he started because they need offense so badly, and like a 6'10" connective passer who can knock down threes and like will still give them everything they want on the defensive end. Like I kind of like that for them. Who else we got in here? A lot of guys that want to go to Chicago area schools so I can scout them up close. Cliff Amore, you should go to DePaul. but sincerely, another one I've thought about a lot is Danny Wolf at Northwestern. Danny Wolf was a really productive and skilled center for Yale. Northwestern is also a really good academic institution. So if like getting a degree from a really good college is still something that matters to him, he can go to Northwestern. He's from the area already, and like their big men have just not been great the last couple of years, like on either end of the court. I think it's a situation where he can walk in and get playing time and they get an upgrade. So it's just a win-win, and he gets to play in the Big Ten, face some real competition, some real tough bigs night in, night out, add a little bit more physicality to his game, get him comfortable, like identifying things out of ball screens when he's playing in drop coverage. Like that's one that I like quite a bit. What are some good ones? Okay, this one's like a long shot. So Chris Mannin at Cornell, like really good lockdown defender with some passing stuff to him. I would like him to go to Wake Forest and just see like, hey, what if he gets the Hunter Salas all of a sudden I'm shooting it now thing? Like that'd be pretty sick. That's one that I like. Who else do we got in here? Let's do one more. Uh, Rytus Petratus, who's like this 6'7" wing who played at Air Force and is like super skilled, like one of those guys that always has like really good defensive playmaking metrics, and like passes the ball and like rebounds and all this stuff. I want to see him at UConn. Like, I feel like they always have these like oversized sort of guards that they can run offense through, like maybe aren't the best shooters. Like Petratus, I think, kind of fits that. I don't know how much run he would get because UConn always has a million guys, but like that's another one that I like quite a bit. And then he also asked about two guys specifically that I left off. What do you think about guys like Robbie Avila and or JT Toppin? Stay where they are, transfer someone else. Big time names, it's smart to your schools with coaches potentially leaving. Anytime a guy's coach leaves, I like don't blame anybody for going to the portal because it's a different program at that point, like straight up. It's just different. My hot take is I think for a lot of guys, like it's good to explore the studio space and be the man. I think there's a lot of good developmental stuff that can come from just being the best guy on the court all the time. And NBA teams are going to find you. NBA teams are going to all of these games. Like NBA teams are at Ivy League games. They are at Missouri Valley games. Like they are at all of these games. NBA teams are going to find you. If you're good and you're productive, like NBA teams aren't like, oh, sorry, we couldn't watch Evansville because they're not on my cable package. Like that's not how this works. They have their video scouting systems. They have people on the ground constantly. Like it's not how it works. So I think I understand like there's a financial reality to it. And like, if you can get paid a lot of money, I'm not going to tell anybody they shouldn't. But I think just like purely from a basketball developmental perspective, if the reason that you're going somewhere is to get more exposure, I think that's a little bit short-sighted. Because I think teams are already exposed to everybody. With those two guys in particular, I think Robbie Avila just needs to get in better shape first. Like I look at what happened to Ali Khalifa this year, and he's in better shape than Ali Khalifa at BYU. But it's like there's times where he's just getting so picked apart that they couldn't keep him on the court. I think that's like a real struggle for Avila. Avila is both like not nimble enough and not strong enough to like consistently impact high major basketball games, in my opinion. I think he'd be best off taking one more year, just trying to get in better shape and then try and scale up a level at that point. JT Toppin, I think it's a different situation. I think with JT, physically he's like, it's abundantly clear that he's ready to play against better competition at a 7.6 block rate, 2.2 steal rate, was a force on the offensive glass. Okay. Defensive rebounder. And just was able to dunk the ball a lot. With JT, I could understand wanting to scale up. I think the one benefit to him staying at a lower level or a smaller school, mid-major school, would be that he might be a higher offensive priority, so he might get to run more stuff with the ball in his hands. That said, New Mexico is not a great place for that either. Maybe now that Jamal Mashburn's transferring out and Jalen House is gone, maybe he'll get a little bit more on ball, but like it just feels like it's going to be a lot of Donovan Dent ball screens, and I don't know how much like JT is going to get to develop his skill set and are still alongside him. I think he might. Like, I think that could be a conversation they have with the coaching staff. Like, hey, short roll me a little bit. Like, let me see different ways I can get involved, or let me run some Zoom action to set up Dent, things like that. Like, I think depending on what the team construction is going to look like, it could make sense for him to just stay there. If he were to transfer, oh man, I kind of like this one. Henry just suggested get JT to Rutgers ASAP. Rutgers would be pretty sick. I think it would be tricky to sell him on it because it would be a lower maintenance role, but like, you look at what they were able to do with Cliff Amore, and like JT can do a lot of those same things, even if he's a little bit shorter. Yeah. What are some good fits for him? Oh, Houston. I like Houston for him a lot, like just a nasty defensive team, but like their bigs are always undersized and he's like big by Houston big standards. That could be a fun one. Iowa State could be really fun for JT Toppin. If Ryan Kalkbrenner is out of the picture, I think Creighton could be really interesting just because it's a different style of big man than they've had. That could be really fun. Let's get to some of the chat questions here. Is Klingon going to have knee and shin splints in the NBA? He seems like a shin splints type guy. That I don't know. We have another question from this one's from Henry on Klingon. What are your personal thoughts on Klingon? He's been insane against good competition, only behind Steph Curry, Kevin Love, Anthony Davis, and Zion Williamson in BPM against top 45 teams. Translation between very good productive versus very good teams. When Young looks to be pretty good based on this trend, obviously his offense isn't at that level, but he's still able to impact the game in a way, so I don't know. I think he's really good. I think he's awesome. I think the medical is going to sway a lot of it. I'm also just kind of becoming like a medical's truther. Like, I think I talked about this a little bit last week. Like, it seems like every year, like, these guys fall in the draft because they're medicals, and a lot of the times it just end up being fine. Like, I think NBA teams have good medical staffs generally and, like, know how to handle this stuff and have seen a lot at this point. I think the fact that he doesn't play like as many minutes is kind of weird. He does get himself in foul trouble quite a bit. Like, there's some hangups to his game. He's not much of a shooter. He missed a bunch of free throws in the bits of the game. I was at my niece's birthday party today, so I didn't get to see a lot of the Illinois game, but in general, like, not a great free throw shooter. That's an issue. But I think he's a stellar offensive rebounder. I think he'll probably be a better defensive rebounder when he's on a team's rebounding team as much. His passing is super underrated, like, both in terms of just like reads out of the post, spray outs after offensive rebounds. Like, this guy's a really good passer, really, really good for a guy his size. So you can get him short rolling, and like, he's just a devastating roll man as it is. Super, super effective as a finisher. Keeps guys out of the paint like nobody's business. Getting better with his hands on defense, getting more and more steals, puts a lid on the rim. Guys don't even go near the basket when he's around. If they do, he's swatting shots like crazy. I think Donovan Klingon's awesome. Like, I'm probably going to have him 3 on my next board, which sounds high. I personally just don't think there's a lot of starters in this class. And, like, if I think I can get Jakob Poeltl with better passing, like, I think that's a really good player. If you want to, like, talk upside, I think that's fine. I just think the upside arguments for a lot of these guys are quite slim, to be honest with you. A lot of these guys just have so many red flags that, like, I get at a certain point. Like, if I'm Washington, am I picking Klingon? Like, maybe not. Like, maybe if I'm a really bad team that, like, needs to drastically change my fortunes, maybe I'm just like, screw it, we're gonna try Cody Williams. Like, we're gonna try Modest Bazelis. Like, we're gonna try Ron Holland. Like, I wouldn't fault the team for trying that. I think there are times where, like, you've got to be a little bit more aggressive with how you swing. But I think if you were just talking, like, what's the outcome gonna be, I think if Donovan Klingon's healthy, like, he's gonna be one of the best players in this class. This one is from, wow, Victor Wembanyama. if the Toronto pick conveys for the Spurs, I honestly want to pick Zachary Richie with our own pick and then Steph Castle with the Raptors pick. What do you think? The Richie fit, I think, is interesting. I think Castle is a trickier fit for me there, and I love Castle. Just because it's another guy that likes to have the ball and is not a good shooter. I would probably pursue some sort of lead guard with one of those picks, whether it's Topic, Dillingham, or Reed Shepard. I'd really like to get one of those guys in the door just to get a good young point guard that I can have run offense and shoot threes and space the floor a little bit. I know Risa is going to space the floor, but like, I still just like want all the shooting in the world around Victor, not only so I can play 5 out, but for like the sake of that rim gravity with him and just maximizing it. I think that's real, real good. This one is from Rio Kanoko. People talk about the Suns need a big, but I wish they would draft a wing. They can get a big in free agency. What do you think they should get? Let's pull up the full draft order and see what guys are like in that range for them. NBA full draft order. Phoenix. So you're picking at like 19. I mean, if it honestly, like Yves Mesi is a guy I see mocked in that range a lot. It would be really hard for me to pass on Yves Mesi for a team like the Suns. Like, I know that Yves Mesi has like severe limitations as a passer at this point, but on a team with like Bradley Beal and Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and Eric Gordon and Royce O'Neal and Grayson Allen, like, how much do I need my center to be passing the ball? Like, I might just take the guy who's like pretty switchable and nasty and going to get putbacks and like not need the ball. But if they don't go that way, I think Tristan Da Silva is an interesting guy for them. He just is like, is another one of those like long shooters who knows how to play without the ball. And like, they should try to get all the shooting they can, at this stage. If a guy like Devin Carter is on the board, he's the guy I would think about too, just to get him a little bit more of like a guardy type option. Kyshawn George could be interesting for them. Zach Edey could be interesting just because he's going to screen like crazy. And it would just be another annoying thing that defenses have to worry about when he's on the court. So those are all interesting ones. So we'll end it there for tonight. I appreciate everybody in the chat asking questions, the people on Twitter that ask questions. I didn't get to all of them, but we got some really fun ones. So I appreciate everybody taking the time to listen. I appreciate so many people joining me live when it is a holiday weekend and there is so much going on. So thank you for that. Check out my article I've got coming out this week. The article is titled Water Testers and Gate Crashers, and it's about some guys that are testing the draft waters that I think have a chance to stay in, depending on how their pre-draft process goes. So definitely check that out. A really fun kind of topic to dive into. Make sure you're subscribed to our Substack, NoCeilingsNBA.com. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at Boundboards. Follow No Ceilings on Twitter at NoCeilingsNBA. And I think that does it. So I will see you all next week. Stephen Gillespie, by the way, going to be back in the mix very soon. Can't wait to get Stephen back on the pod, so stay tuned for that as well. We'll see you all next week.